offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari. We are going to begin the 10th chapter in the 1991 Summer Course series, but as we mentioned last week, this is actually a continuation of the same discourse which was delivered by Swami on 28th May 1991, which is actually the 9th discourse. And the 9th chapter of the Samushava's book is actually on the continuation of the Prashnopanishad, but this is the part where Swami begins the next Upanishad, or the Mundaka Upanishad. But before we begin playing the clips which Swami speaks in this part of the discourse, delivers in this part of the discourse, we'll have a short summary of what Swami said towards the end of the last discourse, the clip which we played last week. So let me invite Brother Hari to join us. Salam Hari. And as we were concluding that last part, I think what was a predominant theme in that was Swami is talking about how the subtle is the background for the gross. And I think that was the theme with which Swami concluded that part.
Yes, right? And Swami, of course, this is first of all wrapping up the Upanishad.
Prashnopanishad.
Prashnopanishad. So the sixth question was about the Shodasha Kalas, or the Purusha with 16 attributes.
Right.
And so Swami, he first spoke about like how it is in the avatar that we see, you know, the all the 16 attributes being used in the most sacred way, which is like an example to all of us. And Swami said that the best way to utilize, or the most sacred way of expressing the 16 Kalas of which the Purusha is made, is to put it in the service of your fellow man. And so Swami gives the example that it is the avatar that is like selfless from top to toe. So
right.
it is man's inherent selfishness that comes as the barrier between expressing his divinity. As you know, Swami puts it very nicely in that equation. No? God plus desires is man, or man minus desires is God.
Right.
So if we take desires to mean, you know, desires for oneself, like to... So that is a selfish, the selfish nature of man expressing itself.
Right.
So Swami first started off by showing us that, you know, if you're inquiring into how to put our 16 kalas of the Purusha that are within each one of us, how to put it to the best use. Swami says the best use is to put it in selfless service. So that was what Swami began with. And then Swami, you know, he wraps up the episode of the six questions being asked, where he says that it was the sage finally, he instructs all of them into the unity of like what is gross and what is subtle, which is a theme that we have been exploring, you know, in the Prashnopanishad, in the Kenopanishad.
Right.
So repeatedly we've been being instructed in the fact that matter and energy, like, you know, how the interplay between them, like prana and Rai, that we heard earlier, the theme of prana and Rai. So here too we see the same thing being spoken in a little more concrete form as the gross and the subtle. So that was some of the themes that Swami explored. Of course, towards the end, Swami was speaking about the prajna, or, you know, that the what we call as awareness or divine wisdom, which is what pervades all the states of our existence as an individual.
Right.
And finally, Swami says that all of these, all our faculties and our kalas and whatever we do, see, think, etc., must all flow towards the Atma, which is again something that has been pointed out in a variety of ways. Like in the last segment we spoke about how our various sadhanas that we take up. So the Upanishads have been pointing out that there are, broadly speaking, three levels at which we engage in sadhana. One sadhana is for the immediate, you know, if we are in some immediate problems, we go to God or we perform certain sacrifices, rituals in order to get rid of the problems. And the Upanishads assure us that yes, if your sadhana is true, and you will get the fruits of that. there are other sadhanas where we perform, where we yearn for a better life or an afterlife. And again, the Upanishads, they say that yes, if again when performed with all devotion, you will certainly get the fruits of that. But again, those fruits are like time bound. So when they expire, you're again back to the place where you started with. So the Upanishads finally, and they are exhorting us to direct all our energies, all our sadhana towards the Atma, the realization of the Atma.
Right.
And so that, this is what Swami is again speaking here, saying that just as, you know, the rivers with distinct names and forms, they meander in different directions, but ultimately the destination or the destiny is the ocean. And it's quite up to us, like, how quickly, how straight we can make our journey. We can meander towards the Atma, or we can purposefully take strides towards it. There is like one, as I was listening to all this, I was just thinking, even we discussed this in the last segment, that there is one missing piece,
okay.
which is the grace of the Lord. And which, you know, as we, I think in today's discourse, we'll certainly come across that missing piece.
Like, okay.
Swami, in fact, the Mundaka Upanishad itself provides that missing piece, which is the grace of the Lord as one of the factors in this equation.
But it's a very beautiful concept which Swami stitched together, because I think it makes it practically understandable, because, you know, Swami started speaking about the selflessness of an avatar. You know, that's where we spoke a lot about how Swami was selfless and the way Swami carried himself. So Swami was drawing a very, very direct connection between selflessness and your ability to go beyond the gross and see the subtle. Because this, I think, is the most important you know, way by which you transcend the gross.
Yes.
Because as long as we are in that state of selfishness, we will only be trying to, you know, make our ends meet within this system, and we will not see the working of the system or go beyond it.
Yeah.
And I think this is the case with everything. You know, even if you look at probably some of the scientists, only those who had that, you know, that tenacity to probably endure a little bit of loss physically, or loss in their life, only they were able to go beyond, you know, just making money, just making name for themselves. That pursuit for truth, which was, in a sense, you know, where they had transcended the level of the senses to a certain extent, where they were ready to probably, you know, even if it is working for long hours, you know, overlooking the discomforts of the body, or them, you know, even then there must have been easier ways to probably sacrifice your excellence and probably make a name and money within the world.
That's right.
But that pursuit of going beyond these sensual benefits that you get, and to go and look for the subtle. I think that's what Swami says in the later part, where he's saying that learn to go beyond the gross and observe the subtle.
Yes, and I think ultimately the message of the Upanishads is to let your lives be led by a higher purpose.
Right.
Not so as against, you know, like our everyday mundane existence, or very what we call, you know, the one of the Western philosophers, Heidegger, would refer to that as the tranquilized obviousness. So you, in many respects, if you look at it, Prem, like our thoughts on any issue are really not our own thoughts. They're not original thoughts. So these are the thoughts that we have inherited, or they've been planted in us through our, you know, the belief systems we grew up in.
Right.
The kind of upbringing we had, the kind of society we had. And it takes a lot of intellectual effort to stand out of that and re-examine the whole thing, you know, in the light of taking ourselves out of the situation. So that is the kind of, you know, they in Zen they call this as being the peaceful warrior. So it's a, you know, obviously an oxymoron kind of expression, but you have to militate against what you have taken for granted, which is one of the questions the Upanishads raises is like, what is important? Is your survival important? Really comes to that. Swami himself is, in one of the sections we studied earlier, Swami is pointing out, these are the principles, and here is your identity which you are fighting for. Like, and he says that this is what you should hold dear. Your principles is what you have to hold dear. And Yeah, I think essentially, to sum up, I think what we've been studying till now from the various Upanishads, it simply comes down to this very aspect which you are pointing out.
Right. And in fact, if we look at Swami, sometimes that question comes, you know, Swami was helping people get over their physical maladies, or Swami was sometimes helping people tide over financial difficulties. So if Swami was really here for that ultimate, you know, why was this being done? Why was Swami trying to manage our affairs in a sense? I just happened to hear a talk sometime back of a youngster who came to Swami in the 1970s. Okay, as a, I think, 20-year-old. You know, there were a lot of Americans and Westerners used to come to Swami who were in their teens, late teens and early 20s. And they used to spend a lot of time in the 1970s in Swami's presence. So one of those youth, okay, Swami had called them for an interview. And he was saying that how subtly Swami teaches. And he said after many years when he looked back at that small incident, he realized that what Swami was trying to do in that sense. Because he was saying that he was in this interview and as a youngster, he was saying that he had a very high metabolism rate. So many times he would have to have about 3 meals before it's actually noontime. He's very, very hungry most of the time. So he used to say that I would pray that Swami doesn't call us for interviews before lunch. Because that's when I'm very, very hungry. I get hungry easily and very difficult to concentrate on anything. So Swami had one day called him for an interview in the morning time. And after about 45 minutes, he started feeling very hungry and he was not able to concentrate on what Swami was saying. And he was saying, when is this going to end? I need to go and, you know, grab something to eat. And just as these thoughts were going across his mind, Swami stops, looks at him with a weird, you know, queer look, and waves his hand, and materializes some sweet or something, and gives it to him and says, eat, pay attention, Swami says. It's almost like, he says, now when I look back, that was meant to settle so that the important thing, you're ready to receive the important thing.
Correct. Yeah.
But if we think the other way around, as you're saying, that if you don't realize that that is the purpose and this is just the means, that prioritization, if we don't do, I think that's when we, as Swami was telling all this while, you probably will only go up till the, you know, the Chandra Loka, or where getting benefits within the world or just in the world immediately after the world. But you will not go till that final mile of reaching the Loka of the Atma or Surya Loka, as Swami was saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think we'll go to the next clip then, the second half of that discourse, where I think Swami starts speaking about the Mundaka Upanishad.
Exactly, yes.
When we recognize one fact, it amounts to recognizing other facts, everything. This Shaunaka saint, approaching Angirasa,
Swami, దేనిని తెలుసుకుంటే అన్ని నీవు తెలిసినటువంటి వారం అవుతామో.
Yes, if that is known, that by after knowing it,
దేనిని దర్శిస్తే అన్ని దర్శించిన వారం అవుతామో.
That if seen, it amounts to seeing everything else.
దేనిని అనుభవిస్తే అన్ని అనుభవించినటువంటి వారం అవుతామో.
That if this experience, it amounts to
seeing. ఆ దివ్యమైన భవ్యమైన నవ్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క తత్వం ఏమిటి అన్నాడు.
Please explain me that divine nature, that new form, that amounts to learning everything.
అప్పుడు అంగీరసుడు చెప్పాడు.
Then Angirasa taught.
నాయన, దీనికి బ్రహ్మవిద్య ఒక్కటి తప్ప అన్య విద్యలు లేవు అన్నాడు.
He said, there is only బ్రహ్మవిద్య, nothing else for you.
ఈనాటి విద్యలన్నీ కూడాను లౌకిక విద్యలు.
All the forms of education relate to the world today.
ఈనాడు చిత్రకళ, సంగీత కళ, సాహిత్య కళ, శిల్పి కళ, ఇంకా బాటనీ, జువాలజీ, ఫిజిక్స్, కెమిస్ట్రీ, ఇవన్నీ కూడా లౌకికమైనటువంటి కళలు.
ఆల్ ఫార్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్, ద పెయింటింగ్, ద మ్యూజిక్, లిటరేచర్ అండ్ సచ్ అదర్ సబ్జెక్ట్స్ సచ్ అస్
ఇవన్నీ కేవలము విజ్ఞానం కోసమని మనం భావిస్తున్నాము. కాదు కాదు.
ఆల్ దీస్ ఫార్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్ వీ థింక్ దట్ దే గివ్ అస్ విజ్ఞాన. నో.
నేడు పరిస్థితిని పూర్తిగా విచారణ చేస్తే ఈ విద్యలన్నీ కూడా నువ్వు కేవలము కూటి విద్యలు, పొట్ట విద్యలుగా మనం రూపొందుతూ ఉంటున్నాయి.
ఆల్ దీస్ ఫార్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్ వెన్ యూ ఎంక్వైర్ ప్రాపర్లీ, They will make you earn your daily bread.
విద్య విజ్ఞానము కోసం అనేటువంటి సత్యాన్ని మనం గుర్తించాలి.
దే షుడ్ అండర్స్టాండ్ ద ఫ్యాక్ట్ దట్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్ ఇస్ మెంట్ ఫర్ విజ్ఞాన.
అప్పుడే ఈ యొక్క బ్రహ్మ విద్యను మనం పొందినటువంటి వారం అవుతాం.
దెన్ ఓన్లీ దే కెన్ అక్వైర్ బ్రహ్మ విద్య.
ఈ బ్రహ్మ విద్య అనగా ఏమిటి?
వాట్ డు యూ మీన్ బై బ్రహ్మ విద్య?
లౌకిక విద్య కేవలము కంటికి కనిపించేది, చెవులకు వినిపించేది, మనసుకు అనిపించేది, ఇంద్రియాలను కొలిపించేటువంటి.
ద వరల్డ్ ఇన్ నాలెడ్జ్ విల్ మేక్ యూ సీ విత్ యువర్ ఐ, విల్ మేక్ యూ లిసన్ విత్ హియర్, అండ్ ఆల్సో అటర్ విత్ యువర్ టంగ్ అండ్ థింక్ విత్ ద మైండ్.
కానీ బ్రహ్మ విద్య అనేటువంటిది కంటికి కనిపించదు, చెవులకు వినిపించదు, మనసుకు అనిపించదు, హృదయాన్ని మురిపించదు.
బట్ బ్రహ్మ విద్య విల్ నాట్ ఎంపవర్ యూ టు సీ విత్ ది ఇయర్, లిసన్ విత్ ది ఇయర్, సీ విత్ యువర్ ఐ, నార్ కెన్ కాంటెంప్లేట్ విత్ ద మైండ్.
ఆత్మను తలపిస్తుంటారు. ఆత్మను తలపించు.
బట్ ఇట్ మేక్స్ యూ రిమైండ్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ.
ఇట్టి ఆత్మ విద్యను మాత్రమే నీవు గుర్తించాలి.
యూ షుడ్ రికగ్నైజ్ సచ్ ఆత్మిక్ నాలెడ్జ్.
అట్టి ఆత్మ విద్య ఎప్పుడు మనకు చేకూరుతుంది?
వెన్ కెన్ యూ హోప్ టు గెట్ దట్ ఆత్మిక్ నాలెడ్జ్?
షోడశ కళా పరిపూర్ణుడైనటువంటి యొక్క స్థితి అంటే ఇవి మనకు ప్రాప్తిస్తాయి.
యూ గెట్ ఇట్ వెన్ యూఆర్ ఇన్ ఎ పొజిషన్ ఆఫ్ 16 ఆస్పెక్ట్స్ ఇన్ ఆల్ ఫుల్నెస్.
అందువలననే భగవంతునకు సత్యం, జ్ఞానం, అనంతం, బ్రహ్మ అన్నారు.
దేర్ ఫోర్ గాడ్ ఈస్ డిస్క్రైబ్డ్ ఇన్ దీస్ నేమ్ సత్యం, జ్ఞానం, అనంతం, బ్రహ్మ.
సత్యం, సత్యమనగా మార్పు చెందినటువంటిది.
ద ఫస్ట్ సత్యం ట్రూత్ దట్ విచ్
త్రికాల భాగ్యమైనటువంటిది సత్యం.
దట్ విచ్ కెనాట్ బి డివైడెడ్ ఆల్ దీస్ త్రీ.
జ్ఞానం,
దెన్ విజ్డమ్.
అద్వైత దర్శనం, జ్ఞానం, రెండు కానటువంటి యొక్క తత్వాన్ని గుర్తింపజేసేది జ్ఞానం.
ద విజ్డమ్ ఇస్ దట్ విచ్ టీచర్స్ యూ ద నాన్ డ్యువాలిటీ.
అనంతం, ఇక్కడ ఉన్నది అక్కడ లేదు అనేటువంటి యొక్క మార్పులు లేకుండా ఇన్ఫినిట్. అది ఎక్కడ చూసినా సర్వత్రా నిండినటువంటిది అనంతం.
ద ఇన్ఫినిటీ ఇస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఆల్ ఓవర్ హియర్ అండ్ దేర్ ఆల్ పర్వేసివ్.
బ్రహ్మ అనగా వ్యాపింపచేసేటువంటిది.
బ్రహ్మ మీన్స్ వాస్ట్నెస్, ఎక్స్పాన్స్.
ఇదియే అంగీరసుడు శౌనక మహర్షికి బోధిస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
దిస్ ఈస్ థాట్ బై అంగీరస టు శౌనక.
ఎవరు ఈ అంగీరసుడు?
హూ ఇస్ అంగీరస?
ఈవరందరి కూడా ఏదో కొంతమంది ఋషులని మనం భావించుకుంటూ ఈ పురాణాల ద్వారా, ఇతిహాసముల ద్వారా మనం ఒక కథలుగా మనం చదువుకుంటూ వస్తున్నాం.
వి టేక్ దెమ్ యాజ్ సెయింట్స్ అండ్ ట్రై టు లెర్న్ ది స్టోరీస్ ఇన్ అవర్ ఇతిహాసాస్ అండ్ పురాణ.
ఇది కథలు కాదు.
దే నాట్ మియర్లీ స్టోరీ.
మానవుని వ్యతలను దూరము గావించేటువంటి యొక్క సద్భావముల యొక్క రస స్వరూపాలు.
దే ఆర్ వెరీ ఫార్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ ద రస, ద లైఫ్ ఫ్లూయిడ్. That will make you free from all the grief.
Angirasa.
That is Angirasa.
Angirasudanaga emiti?
What do you mean by Angirasa?
Prati angamunandu kudanu.
In every limb.
Shodasakala paripurudai.
The one with all the 16 acts.
Prasarinchitam chetana.
As he circulates.
Prati angamunandu kudanu kapadukuntu vastunnadu.
He protects every limb thereby.
Kanukane భగవంతుడు రసస్వరూపుడు.
గాడ్ ఈజ్ ఇన్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్ ఫ్లూయిడ్.
రసము ఏ రీతిగా ప్రవహిస్తుంటుంది?
హౌ డస్ ఇట్ ఫ్లో?
షోడశ కళలను కరిగించి
ఇట్ మెల్ట్స్ ఆల్ ది 16 ఆస్పెక్ట్.
ఆత్మ వైపున ప్రవహింపచేసి
మేక్స్ ఇట్ ఫ్లో టువర్డ్స్ ఆత్మన్.
దివ్యమైనటువంటి జగత్ని అనుభవిస్తూ ఉంటుండాలి.
ఎక్స్పీరియన్సెస్ ది డివైన్ వరల్డ్.
కనుక అంగీరసుడనగా మనలో ఉండినటువంటి ప్రజ్ఞాన స్వరూపుడే అంగీరసుడు.
అంగీరస మెన్స్ ద వన్ విత్ ఇన్ అస్ ఇన్ ద ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ ప్రజ్ఞాన.
That was the clip where Swami speaks about the conversation between sage Angirasa and a student by name Shaunaka, right?
Yeah, and so this is where, as you pointed out, the Mundakopanishad begins.
Right.
So again, see, the Mundakopanishad this time it's from the Atharva Veda.
Hmm.
And just to give a few, like a brief introduction, right, about what is the Mundakopanishad. Actually it is one of the most important Upanishads because a lot of the concepts that we are today familiar with, the topics, they are kind of introduced in this Mundakopanishad. We come across this for the first time. And it has its place, very, very important place, because it's among the 10 Upanishads, the Mukhya Upanishads, which were commented upon by Shankaracharya. And again, we have the Muktikopanishad, which is essentially like a recital,
mm-hmm,
of the 108 principal or the main Upanishads. So in that, we see that the Muktikopanishad, it mentions this as the fifth in the list of 108 Upanishads. So it is a very important Upanishad, which of course, like Swami himself is discussing upon it, it speaks about how important it is for seekers today. And interestingly, that name Mundaka, and you see that actually in one sense Mundaka refers, could be interpreted as merely section. So this Upanishad has three sections, so each section is, so we call it the first Mundaka, second Mundaka and the third Mundaka. But there's another meaning which many commentators have referred to, is where Munda means the shaven head. So here essentially the Upanishad is a very strong pronouncement on like sacrifice.
What
it takes for a person to attain self-realization, and it is very unequivocally declared in this Upanishad that it is the renunciation of desires. And hence it's in that way, and for it echoes a lot of what Swami speaks about in many discourses. And so for all of us devotees, this is a very important Upanishad to pay attention to in that sense.
And of course it starts with this very interesting and fascinating question, which is in many ways it's almost seen as one of those mysterious questions that Upanishad throws up, you know. What is that by knowing which you can know everything? And even as Swami was talking about, you know, botany, zoology and chemistry, I was reminded the first time I heard this statement as you know, as a challenge thrown out by the Upanishads, was told to me by one of our chemistry lecturers. And he was telling us that this is how you should learn the subject. He said, when you start learning a subject, when you start learning a chapter, you have to go through the chapter and try to figure out what is that in this chapter by knowing which I know everything in the chapter. He said every subject and every field has something like that. So if, as a student, if you're keen on learning that, then after that, it all becomes facts and information that you gather.
Or application.
You know, that you can always do. But you should be able to get to the crux of the this one. And that's how it was so very fascinating. And later, of course, in the Upanishads, and we come across, I think even the conversation between Uddalaka and Shvetaketu, I think that's one of the questions the father throws at the son. He says, have you learned that by learning which you have learned everything?
Yes.
And the son who believes that he's a scholar and he's learned much is really stupefied by that question. So really it's something which, again, you know, it again comes to the point what Swami is making here, that all of these other fields like music and botany and literature and scriptures, they help you earn a living. So unless you raise yourself from that point of just seeking to earn a living, you will not look for this knowledge which is fundamental and which is like all encompassing. And as long as, I mean, if you feel that living a comfortable life is good enough, probably you will never go into that quest of knowing that, right?
And interestingly enough, the person who is mentioned here, Shaunaka, the devotee who is actually coming to the to sage Angirasa, he is actually not a student. He is, in fact, in the Upanishad, it is mentioned that he is a sacrificer, which in those days meant like a yajman, you know. He is the person who is, you know, causing or sponsoring the sacrifice, which many interpreters have taken to mean as the householder, as a householder. So this is in, you know, contrast to the
other Prashnoparishad.
In the Prashnoparishad we actually had six seekers who came from such households. So they were all children of very accomplished, realized sages. So they had like quite a bit of background in this inquiry into Brahman. And having that kind of background, they come to Sage Pipilada to ask him. So as you see, the questions there themselves were like very profound advanced questions in themselves. And but here we see the contrast. We have a householder, you know, a very worldly person who is then approaching Sage Angirasa. And again, if you look at Sage Angirasa, he's got a very, you know, great pedigree, because he's the father of Sage Brihaspati. And Brihaspati is one of the Saptarishis, so he is the father of Brihaspati. So there's a kind of pedigree, you know, that sage Angirasa has. And so the householder, when he comes, he asks this question, like, what is the concept, as you were speaking about, knowing which I will know everything, or what is the sight that having seen, Al has seen everything that needs to be seen. Mm. Or what is that magnificent experience which is equal to experiencing everything, and what is so divine and ever new? So this is the question that he poses. And it's very interesting because it's like an echo of the Keno Upanishad.
Right.
So there also of course the Upanishad speaks about the Brahman as the, you know, that which grants seeing, or that which grants knowing, right? So, or the seer of the seer, you know,
seer
that,
of the eye.
Yeah, the eye of the eye and the mind of the mind. So that is a kind of description that it gives of Brahman itself. So here again the same thing. He's asking the question, knowing which I will know everything, and seeing which I will have seen everything that needs to be seen. So it's like an intimation again that this person, after all his sacrifices and several things that he has done, there is an intimation somewhere that he has received that there is a source behind all this.
Mm.
And it is that which drives him to this realized sage to, you know, clear that doubt or something that has arisen in his mind, that there is something hidden, something that I've been missing. So that is what drives him to this sage to ask him. And so we must see the rest of the Upanishad also in that light.
Mm.
That this is a householder, a worldly person who of course performs rituals, etc. And he sees there is something more to be done. And with that attitude of humility, he is coming to the sage to ask for, like, what am I missing now?
No, more like the student who is coming and asking, what are the important questions?
Or he's asking the important questions.
In that light, when you look at it in that light, from what you've said, you can clearly say that what the disciple, whether in Keno Upanishad or in Prashna Upanishad, the question they were asking were literally doubts. In the sense that you have dwelled intellectually into some of these concepts, and they are trying to fill in some gaps which might have been left out.
Right.
Where the questions were very specific. What happens in this stage? What is the source of this? But here it's a more of a general question. That there is something I'm missing out, I'm not sure what it is. There's something more to knowledge, there's something more to seeing, there's something more to experiencing. What is that? It's a very general thing. Just, as you're saying, just the sense that there is something more, but not sure what it is or where to begin that.
Exactly. I think we have spoken about this earlier, but we had a very unique chancellor of the Satya Sai Institute of High Learning in Bhagwan. Because his benedictory discourse, as I remember when I passed out, it started very much on the lines of that all, while congratulating everyone for their academic achievement, however, it's all completely useless. And Swami said it is useless because unless you also set your mind, set your energies to inquiring into the self. So that, and this is a concept Swami has spoken very often, and we see it over here. And this is the, like, a not a dichotomy, but Swami speaks about paravidya and aparavidya.
Mm-hmm.
And so aparavidya, of course, relates to what Swami is speaking about here is art, music, literature, essentially anything that we are gaining through our senses, the education that comes from using our senses to make sense of the world. And in fact, in the this particular Upanishad, it goes as far as to say that even the knowledge of the four Vedas, it says Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, then the grammars, the etymology, all of these sciences, which we indulge in, and the Upanishad blanket, it says that even this is aparavidya, even the knowledge of the Vedas, because yet again, how an ordinary disciple, like how we learn the Vedas or the Upanishads, is again through our senses. And it takes something beyond, so the memorization or rote of the Vedas or the chanting of the Vedas. Yet again here, it says very clearly that this constitutes aparavidya. Not to say that it is a lower form of education or anything. It only says that if your target is Brahman, this is insufficient to reach Brahman. And it also, now again if you come to paravidya, very clear now. Paravidya is not only to say that it is not any of these,
mm-hmm.
but it is very assertive as to what do you mean by paravidya. So paravidya, it says, is the knowledge of the knower.
Okay.
Which is precisely the question which Shaunaka is asking Angirasa. So he is asking, I need to know that, knowing which I know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so this Upanishad is directing us towards that paravidya called knowledge of the knower. Like who is the knower? So it is directing us inwards. So that is the distinction that is made between the paravidya and aparavidya.
Mm. This point which Swami makes, I think the translation in the text is not as precise.
Mm.
What Swami was saying, especially what Swami is saying, the worldly education deals with what is visible to the eye.
Mm.
What Swami was, I think, if I heard Swami right, Swami saying worldly education enables you to see. That's what Swami said.
I see.
He didn't say that deals with what you see.
Right.
He says it enables the eye to see, enables the ear to hear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this again, I think, is an overtone of what we saw in Keno Upanishad.
Right.
Where he said, you know, the instruments, I mean, the senses are only instruments that gather information.
Correct.
But the real perceiving or the hearing happens in the mind.
In the mind, yeah.
So Swami is suggesting that, you know, all of this worldly education only, you know, rearranges the information which you get in the mind, enabling you to have a perspective of the world.
Yes.
Right? But it doesn't give you that education which is, as you're saying, paravidya. Right?
Mm.
And many times I would think of that. What makes spiritual education last beyond death?
Hmm.
And what is the difference between spiritual education and worldly education? That worldly education is shed. You know, when you're born as a baby, you've kind of forgotten it.
It's a blank slate.
You're blank, and even if you're, you know, you're intelligent, you still have to gather that knowledge.
Correct.
But when it comes to spiritual wisdom, you see that even in some children, you know, in a very early
wonderful
age,
yes,
they start exhibiting that wisdom.
Mm.
So there is something which is making this worldly education not last the period after death, but the spiritual education last. So I think that is what Swami is saying here, because the worldly education is something like which adds on to the mind.
Hmm.
But the spiritual education is actually dissolving the mind.
Right.
So it's you start from the stage where probably you have a sparse mind. I mean, being a student of chemistry, I'm only thinking from a cloud of electron and the nucleus in between, where, you know, the cloud of electron becomes sparse as the spiritual knowledge comes.
Mm-hmm.
So probably you start your life every time when you with that stage of the mind having that much less influence on your real understanding.
Mm.
Right? Or the worldly education being something like which only makes this mind more dense. As I think when in the 1990s, Amukho Swami, in one particular discourse, he said that all of the sadhana is only making your mind stronger, so it's not going to relieve you of this bondage.
Right? Beautiful, yes. That's a very important distinction I think we should make, like especially in the spiritual practice. Like various nowadays, as we see, you know, various forms of sadhana, or if we go to certain spiritual retreats, we are taught certain ways, like say to calm the mind or certain breathing practices, etc. But as you rightly pointed out, all of these are simply fortifying that illusion that we are the mind.
Exactly.
And the Upanishads do not speak about these things. They make a clear distinction that, okay, you have certain problems, like those you can leave behind, because where you're focusing is on the wrong point.
Right.
You have taken yourself to be somebody very small, as the Jivatma.
Mm.
And so it doesn't speak about stress management or anger management, any of those points. Yeah, they say that is the, you know, the, it's part of your worldly existence. It's part of your life as an individual. Like, no matter how much of stress management we learn, at the end of it, there is still going to be stress. It's an inescapable part of life. And Swami made that clear so many times by saying that pleasure is an interval between two pains. It's like a law of the universe. And so the quest for happiness, we go to so many spiritual retreats thinking that at the end of it, we have the secret to happiness. But what life keeps giving back is like more of, you know, suffering.
Right.
And so if you notice the Upanishads, the Vedas, they hardly pay attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
They keep reiterating that you are above all this. And there's no point dealing with that garbage, because what you are is way above that. So, which is, I think, a very, very important distinction what you brought out.
I think that many ways, if you look at it, that labeling becomes so very important. You know, where you start from. I mean, I was just thinking, like, suppose you want to quit a bad habit, right? You are in different stages of quitting that bad habit. But in every stage of that, how do you define yourself? Are you defining yourself as a person who is trying to get out of that habit?
Correct.
Or are you going to define yourself as somebody who is caught in that habit?
Right.
And I think that makes a lot of difference. And that's why even when you see Swami, you know, the first label which he gives when he starts the discourse is Prema Swarupalara, Divyatma Swarupalara, you are an embodiment. You are not a body, you are an embodiment of something which is more divine.
Right.
And so that labeling, as you are saying, that's where the Upanishads pitches. You are not the mind. And that's again why this idea of the koshas is very strong. Where it says that these are all layers, but it is something you have worn on yourself.
Correct.
That you release yourself from, that your reality comes. Where even the mind is called one of the dresses that you wear.
Correct.
Right? The manomaya kosha and the vijnanamaya kosha.
Yeah, so that labeling is very important. As you said, Swami would not, you know, he used to prevent, or rather, he would not, he would point out that it's a mistake to keep calling oneself a sinner.
Right.
Like to say papatma, patma, papatma, that is abhorrent for Bhagwan, you know. And as you rightly said, like, that is focusing on that.
Right.
You know, you're focusing on your vices. And that never helps. Like, you know, if you notice, like, how many people are prone to anger, and they have probably learned like hundreds of techniques, but if you actually finally ask them how many times they have lapsed into anger, that, you know, it's never improved. Maybe yes, you made some small headway, but if really you want to make, you want to have a complete break from the past, it doesn't help in reinforcing the fact that you are an angry person, you are an angry person. Yeah. It just reinforces that. So that's why if you notice in the Upanishads, they just don't speak about these things. They keep harping on just one point. You are the divine. You are divine. You are divine. And they ask you to stay there. That is the
beauty is, I mean, any of these concepts which you're talking of, I think in isolation, they can be misunderstood, misused, misquoted.
Yes.
But that's why each of these principles which Swami spoke in this discourse beginning and the earlier discourse, you know, some of these simple characteristics of a good person, guilelessness, selflessness,
correct,
and moral living.
Yes.
When you couple all of these with this concept of you're not the mind, you're not your addiction, you're not your afflictions in your mind, I think only then you actually progress in the right direction.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you can, I mean, we see that a lot of people doing convenient philosophy, you know,
precisely,
indulging in whatever they want to do, but after all, I'm not the mind, after all, I'm not the body. I think it doesn't work that way.
Yes.
You're only going to
Swami has given a very clear yardstick.
Right.
That when this happens, this is how the person appears. So that's what you got to check against. Like, am I being like selfless? Am I being, you know, am I defending myself for actions, you know, that, or what you said, no, convenient philosophy, justifications. Right. Am I providing that or am I being authentic?
Right.
So that is a very clear yardstick that Swami has given. So,
shall we play another clip that? This one, it's another short clip like the previous one.
Yes.
ఈ ప్రజ్ఞానం అనేటువంటిది దేహమునందు మనసునందు అంతఃకరణయందు ఇంద్రియములయందు ప్రాణములయందు ఈ యొక్క కర్మల యందు కూడా అన్నింటి యందు కూడా నువ్వు లీనమై ఉంటుండాలి.
ద ప్రజ్ఞాన ఈస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ద బాడీ ద మైండ్ సెన్సెస్ అండ్ ద లైఫ్ లిమ్స్ ఆల్ ఓవర్ ద బాడీ.
కనుకనే దీనిని ప్రజ్ఞానం బ్రహ్మ అని వేదము లోపల ప్రధానమైన సారంగా భావిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
దేర్ఫోర్ ది ఎసెన్స్ ఇస్ సెట్ ఇన్ వేద ప్రజ్ఞానం బ్రహ్మ.
నాలుగు వేదముల యొక్క ప్రధానమైనటువంటి సూత్రములు నాలుగు.
దట్ ద వాక్
ప్రజ్ఞానం బ్రహ్మ,
ద నెక్స్ట్ ప్రజ్ఞానం బ్రహ్మ,
అయమాత్మ బ్రహ్మ,
ద నెక్స్ట్ అయమాత్మ బ్రహ్మ,
అహం బ్రహ్మాస్మి,
ద ఫైనల్ వన్ ఇస్ అహం బ్రహ్మాస్మి.
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క సూత్రములన్నీ కూడాను అనంతమైనటువంటి అర్థములతో కూడి,
సచ్ థీరీస్ విత్ ఇన్ఫినిట్ మీనింగ్స్,
కేవలము మానవుని ఎందే కూడాను ఇవన్నీ కూడాను అంతర్భూతమై ప్రవహిస్తూ ఉంటున్నాయి.
దే ఆర్ కంటెయిన్డ్ ఇన్ మ్యాన్ అండ్ ఫ్లో ఇన్సెసెంట్లీ.
మానవుడు దేనిని తెలుసుకోవాలన్నను
Whatever that man desires to know, he need not know outside. He need not search in text. Everything is contained within him. He has forgotten that which is contained within him. He surrenders himself thinking that everything is
within.
And he is subjected to frustration and disappointment thereafter.
తాను పోగొట్టుకున్నది ఒక చోటు, వెతకటం మరొక చోటు.
హీ లాస్ట్ ఎట్ వన్ స్పాట్ అండ్ సర్చెస్ ఎట్ అనదర్ ప్లేస్.
చిక్కుతుంది ఆ పదార్థం తన.
హౌ డస్ హీ హోప్ టు గెట్ ఇట్.
కనుక నిరాశకు గురి అయిపోతున్నాడు.
దేర్ఫోర్ హీ ఇస్ డిసప్పాయింటెడ్.
ఎక్కడ పోగొట్టుకున్నాడో అక్కడ పోయి వెతకాలి.
హీ షుడ్ సర్చ్ ఫర్ ఇట్ వేర్ హీ లాస్ట్.
అన్ని తన ఇంటి ఉంటున్నవి.
ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఈస్ కంటైన్డ్ విత్ ఇన్ హిమ్.
కనుక తన ఇంటి వెతకాలి తాను.
సో హీ షుడ్ సర్చ్ విత్ ఇన్.
అప్పుడే ఈ దివ్యమైన యొక్క తన యొక్క ప్రకాశవంతమైనటువంటి యొక్క ప్రజ్ఞ తనకు లభిస్తుంది.
Then only he can hope to capture that divine feeling in all
effulgence. Everything
is contained in this word akshara.
Anaga anityamainatundi nityamainatundi rendintu yokka ekatvame ee aksharam.
Meaning it is a combination of that which is temporary and permanent.
Ikkada rendu bhagamuluga manam vibhajinchukundam.
Here we can classify them into two categories.
Chara. Chara.
Here there are two aspects. One is A, the other one is Chara.
A.
Okay. That was a really short clip because I think Swami is going on into the next concept where he's talking about Akshara, the perishable and the imperishable and how they come together and create the creation. What we'll do is next week, I think we'll start with that part where Swami starts speaking about all is contained in the word Akshara. Probably we'll discuss till that point, because I think a couple of themes which Swami had spoken of in the last point we had missed out, right?
Yes. And like, you know, sometime at the beginning of that clip, we were describing the physical attributes of who Angirasa is. Like physically, who Angirasa is, like in a
father of someone.
Yes, we refer to his pedigree as... as being the son of a Saptarishi, the father of a Saptarishi. And here Swami, he reminds us that we lose a lot of the essence of, you know, the mythologies and the stories in the Upanishads if we tend to take them literally. Mm-hmm. So if it is true with, you know, even at a physical level, just the other day I was talking to a person who is, you know, who is a lecturer over here in the Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, and he's a visiting lecturer.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew him for 2 years, and I knew that he was a management consultant who works here, you know, part time. So I realized that I've never really asked him, where do you work or where did you work?
Mm.
His background, that was not something that was known to me. So suddenly it struck me that there's a gap, you know. I talk to this person on a daily basis, but I don't know his background. So I asked him, and he told me that, you know, he had earlier worked for the, you know, big two among the, you know, auditing companies and all that. So, I was really impressed with those credentials. And then suddenly, you know, he also said, you know, I didn't bring this up ever with you in any conversation, though we have known each other for all this long. Because one thing I felt is that we are so caught up with these kind of labels as to who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in Prashanti Nilayam, what we should be inquiring is to who we truly are, as against getting stuck with, you know, who is this person, what is the background, what have they achieved, because that is clearly where our attention goes most of the time.
Actually, I mean, I have reminded of an incident which is quite contrary to what exactly you are saying, where, you know, there was this gentleman in Bangalore who used to drive Swami around whenever Swami is in Bangalore. Whenever Swami comes back from Bangalore to Parthi, or within the city when Swami is going to devotee's house, this person would drive Swami's car. So one day Swami was inside Thrai, and this person had come. So he sent word through a student to inform Swami that he has come. So this boy went up to Swami's presence and he said, Swami, Swami's driver has come.
Okay.
Swami said, which driver? Driver is here only, who has come? Swami said, driver Swami who drives Swami's car in Bangalore city. And Swami said, hey, what are you telling, driver? Do you know who he is? And then Swami started telling, he is a millionaire, he has his own industries, he has got 7 industries. And then, and you know, Swami was saying that you're missing out a very important point, not because he is a big man.
Right.
You know, you miss out the humility and the devotion aspect
right.
when you don't know the bigger picture.
Correct.
Right? Right. I mean, I'm not saying that we should know, but I think that's what Swami is saying here when he's talking about Angirasa, that thinking that he is limited to this personality of so-and-so, you actually miss out how important the message he is giving, because he's much larger than or much subtler than what you know, the Puranas say that he is.
I think, like, just referring to that paradoxical, you know, things that we heard less in the last 5 minutes.
Right.
But it is so very true. In spirituality, there are so many facets that in, and so essentially what, there is no, like, one size fits all.
Right.
Right. And this is a very important thing for all of us to remember, that what is appropriate in one situation is pretty much not appropriate in another. As with Swami, you know, Swami asks us, see, sometimes when he asks, like, who are you, it is very appropriate to give an answer that Swami, like, I am the Atma or, you know, I am the Brahman. And there are some people from whom, and Swami would hear that answer, Swami would be extremely pleased. But at the same time, if, like, you come to know, oh, this is an answer which Swami likes, and Swami asks you, like, who are you? And you give an, instead of, you know, or where have you come from? If you give an answer which is, you know, very abstract or philosophical, he would cut you to size very quickly. He would say, I asked you your name. Tell me that. So it's a, it, you know, as I said, like, it has to be so very appropriate to the situation. But yes, like, moving on, like, Swami, what he reminds us that is to pay attention to the larger picture. And often this larger picture is hidden in the name that has been chosen. The epithet here is Angirasa, and Swami goes, or Angirasa, sorry, Swami goes deep into that name. And so he says, on the one hand, Anga means limb, and Rasa is essence. So that is why this name has been chosen so specially, because this simply is an embodiment of what we've been speaking so far. Which is, the Swami says that what is Angirasa is that power which guards and fosters every limb of the body. And the body is the, you know, it is the fort within which you have the 16 kalas. So essentially this, how does, Swami also says, how does the rasa flow? And Swami says it melts the 16 kalas, all the attributes that a person has, and makes them flow towards the Atma. And so Swami concludes that when we say Angirasa, Angirasa is none other than the embodiment of wisdom itself, which is the awareness. And yet again, like, Swami is taking over from where we left off in the previous section.
Exactly.
Like, we ended the Prashnopanishad on this note, and Swami is now picking up the threads.
That's why the clip which we played a couple of weeks back, Swami spoke that. Where the 16, Swami said, is the five elements and the five senses and the karmendriyas, jnanendriyas. And he said when there is purity in all of these, then you become that purusha with 16 attributes.
Correct.
So Swami is literally saying that Angirasa is a personality who is created to represent that.
Exactly.
You know, that prajna. I mean, towards the end, Swami defined a person who is like that, is a one of prajna, and Swami is saying that the same Angirasa is the one who is giving this wisdom.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And Swami makes it very clear, like, I think we should know what is this term prajnana that we are speaking about in this context. And Swami says it is the witness that pervades all of this, the body, the senses, the mind, our actions, everything. And so in other contexts, Swami has spoken about prajnana as constant integrated awareness.
Right.
So that is, so which the, you know, Vedas have spoken about as that awareness, that constant integrated awareness is Brahman itself. And, you know, like, of course, we are speaking about something which seems very abstract, but when I look at Bhagwan, especially when I look at what Bhagwan is to train us in. See, sometimes we would be sitting in darshan and my attention would go towards the lucky students who would be sitting around Swami and who would be serving Swami physically. So I used to wonder, like, you know, what is that spiritual practice that Swami is teaching them? I used to think that, you know, I am sitting here at this distance, but these students are sitting so close to Bhagwan, they must be getting instruction in some, sadhana. And I was wondering what it is that Swami is teaching them. And I tried to put myself mentally in their, you know, place, and I was watching, okay, what do they do? And I saw essentially their task was this. Say Swami is sitting there and say he's finished reading one page of a letter. So one of them would quickly, you know, get up and turn, you know, help Swami turn that page so that Swami can see the other side of the letter. Or if Swami tilts his head slightly in one direction, they know that, you know, the glass of water is what has to be offered to Bhagwan. And some other, you know, so essentially their whole task was sitting there and being so completely aware, you know, of, so not inside their heads. They had to be very, very aware of what Swami was doing. Their attention had to be out there at all times. And I was just thinking that that is indeed a beautiful training in awareness. If at that time you are stuck with, you know, some time ago, so and so said this to me, and you are affected, that comes in the way of doing your duty, and Swami would tell immediately, you know, you could see that if your attention wavers, Swami will catch you right then and there. So that was a training, you know, like that you can't be stuck inside your head with whatever emotions, feelings, thoughts that you're going on. It has to be so razor sharp, you know, that awareness is a very thin edge that we have to skate on. And so it's a, this Swami is giving me higher status. He says that this kind of constant integrated awareness is what is Brahman.
In fact, you know, somebody recently, I think yesterday or day before, somebody forwarded an article written on a super specialty hospital. I think you would have read it. It's written in INSEAD's online journal.
It's a very famous management school.
Their online
in
journal.
In Paris, yes. Right. Their online journal.
Okay. Today also happens to be the anniversary of our Whitefield Hospital.
16th anniversary.
Right. And this article was about the Whitefield Hospital because this particular writer had undergone a certain treatment there.
Yes.
And it was very interesting what he had done in that article, the way he had expressed it, very precisely what you were saying. He connected mindfulness to the way the treatment happens in the hospital.
Right.
And, you know, a very beautiful point, exactly what you were saying. He said, see, what is the idea of a medical system, infrastructure like a hospital? The idea is to give relief to patients. But we've made this medical system so complex that there are so many stakeholders, we are trying to please all of them, where the purpose is lost.
Exactly.
And he said, finally I come to a hospital where the entire system revolves around treating a patient.
Yes.
And he said, this is actually mindfulness in action.
Right.
Because you have an entire system which is trying to focus on the purpose of that system.
Exactly.
And everything else is, you know, prioritized based on what is best for the person in the middle of the system.
Exactly.
And when you know, that scene of students sitting around Swami and Swami being the center, though we didn't realize it, Swami was actually teaching us mindfulness. Now, the idea of being there was to be able to present ourselves, you know, completely and make ourselves available to Swami.
Correct.
And that can be done by these simple things of, you know, oh, Swami wants this, Swami is looking for this. You know, sometimes Swami will just clear his throat and immediately a glass will come. Or Swami would wipe his face with the tip of his sleeve and immediately somebody will get up with a handkerchief. Actually, all of this was mindfulness.
Correct.
You know, we didn't realize that. Right? And that's, to be able to live in that state every moment is constant integrated awareness. It's like not in patches, not in modules, but constantly.
Yeah. Speaking about this, what you were saying about, you know, the philosophy of healthcare, which is practiced in our hospitals, there is a conversation that is going on even in academic circles in the US, business schools, where they're you know, looking at how healthcare has lost sight of what it is essentially there to do, which is to create value for a patient. So they're not looking at patient outcomes, they're not looking at the end of it. Like
improvement
what is
of health as such.
Improvement of health, like that is definitely there. But, you know, in every other business establishment, you're always looking to delight the customer. Save the, you know, healthcare sector, where all you're stuck about is how can I cure this person and have him leave, you know, my doors and with a lot of his money in my possession. We are not looking at, like, how can we improve the overall quality. See, Swami or even the WHO defines health in terms of well-being. So you're not, maybe you restored his physical condition, but that well-being, you know, there left with something, a bad taste in the mouth at the end of the day. And that is, you know, most, and in fact, there was this interview which was conducted by an NGO in Pune, based out of Pune. They interviewed several doctors, and it was really a revelation to see how even they, though benefiting from that kind of system, how they're internally being torn apart. So it's in that way, Swami, making this hospital free, it's free not just for the patients, it's free even for the doctors. It frees them up from a lot of things and enables them to, you know, provide medical care. So in that sense, as you were saying, you know, heartfulness or mindfulness of like what is in front of you, right in front of you, what has presented itself in front of you, and how do you respond to that in the most appropriate manner. And that was the kind of training. So prajnanam as such is like an abstract concept, but we're speaking about like what we saw in practice, like in Swami's presence, how did it actually manifest?
Right.
And then Swami, of course, speaks about the four Mahavakyas, Tattvamasi, which is found in the Chandogya Upanishad, then which translates to that you are, you know, or you are that. Then there is awareness is Brahman, which is Prajnanam Brahma, which figures in the Aitreya Upanishad. Ayamatma Brahma, which Swami used to, many times he used to chant this. And this is from the Mandukya Upanishad.
Okay.
And finally, Aham Brahmasmi, which is like very memorable. And that is from the one of the, you know, big Upanishads, is the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the most important along side by side with Chandogya Upanishad. So these are called the Mahavakyas, like the essence, which is taken from practically each of the Rig Veda, Yajurveda, Samveda, Atharveda. Each one has contributed a Mahavakya, and Aham Brahmasmi is from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad.
Right. And of course, one more thing before this part which Swami said, which was very beautiful, is description of God through these four words, which, you know, we've heard many times from Swami. We sing it in bhajans.
Yeah.
Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam, Brahma. So beautifully Swami said Satyam because it is beyond past, present and future. Because Trikala Badhyam Satyam is, Swami would say. And then Jnanam because Jnanam is the wisdom of non-duality. You know, Advaita Darshanam Jnanam, Swami says. So Jnanam represents that God is non-dual.
Yeah.
You know, He is not two but one. And then Anantam is unlimited, infinite. The way Swami described it was very beautiful in Telugu. He said, you can't say it is here, it is there, it is not there, it is here. He said, you know, that which cannot be defined by that statement, that it is here and it is not there.
Right.
It's a very poetic way of saying that it's infinite.
Yeah.
Saying that it cannot be fit into that description, so it is Anantam. It is everywhere.
Yeah.
Then Swami says Brahman because it's vast. It is all-encompassing. And it contains everything. It's not just omnipresent, but it is all-encompassing. That's a different way of looking at God.
Yeah. In fact, the phrase Satyameva Jayate, which appears on, you know, that Ashoka, one of the symbols of Indian government also, the entire phrase Satyameva Jayate Na Anrutam. So ultimately, it is truth that triumphs and not only untruth, not only falsehood, but what we take to be the truth, the temporary, you know, truth, it triumphs even over that, and that comes from the Mundaka Upanishad. So I think we really hit the gold mine as far as spiritual learning is concerned. So,
So I think we'll conclude this week's episode with that. Dear listeners, thank you for joining us. We most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. Do join us again next week for the continuation of this discourse that Swami is giving on the Mundaka Upanishad. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of the day, the satsang on the Prema Vahini. I'll join you again next week with Hari. Till then, happy listening.